So we live in an unequal world. You know, there are issues that we want to try and bridge, but we're not going to be able to do that in a one effort, one shot attempt. So we need to do it incrementally, but we just need to do it with a bit of confidence.
Campus Chronicles is the ultimate podcast for college students seeking real stories, honest advice, and empowering insights to thrive in student life and beyond. Hosted by Brooke Young and the Campus Chronicles team, this weekly show features inspiring interviews, practical tips, and conversations that tackle the challenges, wins, and personal growth that comes with university life. Perfect for college students, campus leaders, and young adults looking to make the most of their journey, one episode at a time. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube, and join the community redefining what it means to thrive in university. Well, hello, hello, everyone. So there's somebody that has taught me so much that I was thinking to myself, I said, I have to have him back because I need to learn how to create a more inclusive world and get that building block for the next step. So we have the wonderful Pete Quinn here back with us. Pete, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me back. Thanks for your kind words as well. As a British man, I find it very hard to take that kind of compliment. So I'll take your word for it.
But, well, you know, I'm going to give you lots of compliments. But before we get into all of our amazing stuff we're going to talk about, Pete, I want to hear, what is your Campus Chronicles story?
Okay, so I did an undergraduate degree in anthropology, and it was a very free-flowing modular degree program, and I veered off into doing refugee studies. Really exciting topic, really loved it, but I think it drew my attention a bit far away from the core content of anthropology. So I almost failed my first year, and the kindness that was shown to me by a couple of academic colleagues back at Oxford Brookes University just helped me over the line. And so I noticed that kindness and tried to take that forward into my work. So they didn't give me a pass. They made me work for it. Absolutely fair. But, you know, they did it with kindness rather than the kind of big stick you must approach.
I love that. And the other thing with that, too, is they're not punishing you for having curiosity. And I think that's such a big deal, is sometimes we're curious about something, but we don't necessarily know how to approach it. And one place that I know that I've really struggled personally, to be honest with you, is inclusivity, because I want to do the best that I can. That's where my heart is, but I don't always know how to do it. And it's such a difficult topic to touch on, that a lot of us get our education from the media, from movies, from pop culture, but that isn't always the best representation. What do we get wrong about inclusivity in our world, in the way that we talk about it, in the way that it's represented?
I think the big thing is that everyone, to some extent, has fear about it. Mm-hmm. And what fear tends to produce is a clunky response rather than a confident response. So we live in an unequal world. You know, there are issues that we want to try and bridge, but we're not going to be able to do that in a one effort, one shot attempt. So we need to do it incrementally, but we just need to do it with a bit of confidence and be willing to make a few mistakes and, you know, a few clunky responses is fine as long as we're prepared to learn from it. But yeah, a lot of people try and do the whole thing all in one go, and that's not realistic. That's not going to achieve change. So we just need to do kind of small incremental steps to start with. And then confidence builds. And I think that's the way forward. I encounter lots of people who are really fearful about saying and doing the wrong thing. And what does wrong mean? It's, you know, that kind of backlash, public shaming, all that kind of stuff that we're seeing. Again, we just need to be a bit kinder.
Mm-hmm. I think cancel culture can play such a big role in that. People are very fearful of getting canceled or erased from a friend group if they make the wrong comment or decision. And obviously, we want to do everything with kindness. But what's the difference fundamentally between sort of this clunky response that you're referring to and then a more confident response? What does that look like?
Well, I mean, if I was in a friendship group that canceled me after one clunky comment, I'm not sure I'd want to stay there anyway. I mean, if people are so on a knife edge, which, and I can understand why, you know, there's some very fraught circumstances in some environments, but people need to take a breath and a step back. And is it realistic that one person has said one thing wrong one time and that's it, they need to go? I don't think that. If there's a pattern of behavior and there's not the willingness to learn and make a mistake and learn from it and move forward, okay, I could see why you might kind of retreat a little from people. So I think it's just a case of going steady, you know, steady away at it. And I don't mean let's move slowly and it's fine and we've got plenty of time. No, I just mean let's take a thoughtful, considered approach. Because what we do lack currently, and may have done for quite some time, is that we've lost the art of productive disagreement. And why do we need to have productive disagreement? Because we're not all the same. We've got different perspectives, different viewpoints. And particularly that's what you go into a campus for, right? To express ideas, to learn, to disagree productively, to learn why another person is thinking in a slightly different way to yourself. And then that's fine and that's okay. So that diversity of thought, it's really important to foster and develop that. And you don't get that by cancelling. I'm concerned when I hear that people are kind of immediately into a fraught relationship rather than one that's constructive and wants to develop a bit of understanding. But I can also understand why, particularly some of our communities who are very frustrated that they are still in a similar position that they were, you know, quite some time ago. And it feels like we're looping back to a more of a retrograde or a, you know, kind of problematic environment rather than an inclusive one.
Yeah. And to be honest, I know I've been hearing a lot of that as well with certain communities, is when you feel like you're going backwards, it's very hard to stay optimistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you may have spotted that I'm slightly older than yourself. And I've been through a number of cycles of, you know, kind of cultural phenomenon where, you know, we've in the UK, we've had examples of race riots in the past. We've had big discontent with the government. We've had all sorts of challenges like that. If you look to the wider aspect in Europe, there's always been discontent from the 60s onwards. So these are things that happen, patterns of discontent, which are usually resolved by, you know, a progressive, productive outcome. So I think we're probably in another phase or a pattern of that. I think we've got different circumstances with technology, social media, those kind of areas, which the information flow is possibly different. And there are very polarized news views and that kind of topic getting in. But the cycle changes really quickly, really rapidly as well. So maybe in those spaces between those phenomena, we're not getting the chance to reflect as we once did. But that's the kind of cultural bit. What can we practically do? There are quite a few things that we can practically do to address some of the challenges we have.
I want to get into the practical bit, but I want to highlight something you said that I thought was very, very intelligent. And that's about consuming social media, different sorts of media, and how polarized that is.
Mm.
I'm very, very careful about that because I work in media. But for so many students, they are actively consuming so much more content than they realize.
Mm-hmm.
What is your advice if you're consuming a lot of content and you see something that may not seem entirely accurate? How do you move through that?
Oh, well, I think you have
to... I know that's a big question. I'm just curious your perspective of it.
We've only got an hour, right, for that question. No. I remember an academic I used to work with who then... I was in a student support, student affairs role, but I needed to see him. I think he had the power to give away some money from a particular fund or something. He, on his wall, he always had question everything, you know, just a kind of statement. And I think you do need to, you need to go in intelligently into content. I follow people on social media that I disagree with. I think that's really important. But the algorithm is trying to get me to respond and react. It's there to get me to click on it, follow it, grab my attention and take me down that particular route. And I need to be aware and conscious of that. So if I'm a person on social media, I probably want to limit the amount of time I'm taking on it. I want to really work hard at that. I need to also balance that with interactions with people in real life. I don't necessarily mean in person, you know, that may be through a digital means, but I think once we start to surface and circulate some of these ideas and themes that come up on social media in real life, that's when they can be really shown in their true light. You know, so there's quite a lot of comedians in the UK who kind of develop some quite good sketches from just completely crazy themes. Like there's a guy, he's popped up again. This was from years ago, but he got into a taxi. And the driver said, you know, if you say you're English these days, they put you in jail. And the whole sketch is about, what? Where did you see that? You know, oh, it's on social media, so it must be true, that kind of thing. And I think people just run with things that clearly and patently can't be true most of the time. But yeah, question it. And don't spend so much time on it. There are other places that you can get information from. That aren't just reliant on a big feed or a big algorithm.
You're right about the algorithm, because that's how those companies make money. And I don't think we acknowledge that enough. It is a business.
They make a lot of money.
It's easy to be a keyboard warrior. Mm. And what I mean by that is sit behind your screen and feel a certain way about a topic or a group of people. But when you go out into the world and you actually engage with people, and you see their beautiful humanity, which you can't find behind your keyboard, you can learn so much.
Well, and you might find that ugliness too. I think it's, you know, it's important. You can't just look for the good in everything and what you like and what is attractive to you. But there's an organization that's I'm involved in through sort of tragic circumstances. We had a member of parliament who's, you know, our representative that we've democratically elected, who was killed by a right-wing terrorist in my hometown. Her name was Jo Cox. And an organization came up around that tragedy called More in Common. And they do a lot of activity in the UK on a regular basis around, we have, in her maiden speech in Parliament, so the first time she stood up and spoke, she made the quote, we have far more in common than that which divides us. So she came from a polarized community, quite a lot of minority ethnic communities within a mainly white community, post-industrial. And I think that kind of work that they do, which is around bringing people together of different backgrounds, different opinions, just to spend some time together and realize that we're talking about fellow human beings, we're not talking about them and us. And for whatever reason, both the corporations who profit from that discontent and discord, and the, you know, current governments and political movements that want to pitch one community against another, again, usually for financial gain, we need to be aware of that. But yeah, there's stuff that we can do more together. We have far more in common than divisors. They do an annual event called the Great Get Together, which is just bringing people together around food, activity, makes a huge amount of difference. Can save hours, weeks, months of work, just putting people together in a neutral environment.
I love that. And it's so much easier. Sometimes some people feel that they need somebody to be oppositional towards, or they need a group to blame. And that's not always the case. I want to shift into the productive aspect of the things that you said. So last time we talked about creating a more inclusive world, obviously we're talking about college campuses. If you were back, this is going to be an interesting question. I just came up with it. If you were back on a university campus today, maybe you're that age, maybe you're not. What is the first thing you would do to make it a more inclusive space?
I mean, I think the COVID pandemic has done quite a bit around re-scoping and reframing campuses. I think a lot more teaching and learning is happening in smaller groups now rather than the big lecture format. I think that's an area that can be improved. A lot of the work I'm doing currently with campuses and universities is around making spaces more neuro-inclusive and being aware of that. So a lot of building design now, when you walk into a welcoming space, there's usually a Starbucks or, you know, kind of coffee barista type thing. Lots of noise, lots of smells, very bright light, quite noisy. You know, some people are attracted to that, but people with neurodiverse profiles aren't really keen to walk into a cacophony of noise, smell, light. So making spaces that are a bit more quieter, a bit more able to decompress. And these are all things that we can do. We don't need to erase the campus and start from scratch. We can just think about what our welcoming spaces look like and normalizing where you're meant to go and what you're meant to do in a campus space. I think that's one thing that I would change and do change. Just making sure that signage works, where you need to go, why are you going there? You know, why do I need to go to this place? What's the purpose of that? Kind of giving a narrative to the culture of the space. This is where I need to be quiet. This is where I can be as loud as I like. This is where I can charge my devices. This is where I need to kind of just keep the space clear because there's huge amounts of people going through it. All those kind of, you know, little areas. What's the space for? Who uses it and why? And it makes it really clear for everybody then. That works for neurodiverse people. It works for people who are unfamiliar with campus environment. Whether it's that from a nationality perspective or just a class or economic status perspective. It's just kind of making the campus clear. What's it for? Who uses it? Why they use it, etc.
It's really interesting. So firstly, I never actually thought about welcome spaces. That's an example of I'm a well-meaning person, but that would never occur to me. You know what I mean? And as you're explaining it, the scents and the sounds and the lights, that is very overwhelming. And I love the concept of making
people,
it clear.
For some people, yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm an introvert myself. So I'm like, you know, it doesn't even really appeal to me, to be completely honest with you. And your point about the signs is interesting because you mentioned the nationality perspective. Especially with university, you're coming into contact with people who obviously are different than you, grew up in a different way than you, may even speak a different language than yourself. So I think that would definitely cut down on social issues. Because sometimes when we get into social situations, right, it's easy to judge someone else and not think about where they're coming from or what they might have been exposed to. And I'm sure that really cuts down on that.
One thing as well, in many campuses, whether that's a thing in the US as well, is they have office hours, you know, where you can. Now, that I know that means I can go and see my tutor, my academic, my professor, whoever. But for some people, that sounds like office hours. Oh, they're in their office working. I can't disturb them. Right. And that's equally a valid interpretation. So just things like that, you know, office hours means you can come and visit me during this period of time, book a slot, not I'm available during office hours. You know, just things like that, little things like that is
I never thought about something like that.
Yeah. And it's just some really typical things like that where the language of campus, the language of higher education is translatable to people who know that language, you know. But if you don't know it and it's unfamiliar to you, then just make it clear. Happy for you to visit. Come and see me at this time in this space, in person or digitally.
That's amazing how you've learned all these different phrases and things that are causing, not to say issues, but just causing a less than smooth journey. So when you go into a campus now, when you're working in that space, is that one of the first things that you audit or look at?
Yeah. So we review it. We don't audit it.
Wrong word.
No, that's fine. And you know, it's not said in a judgmental way, but audit to me suggests that someone's standing there with a clipboard and a red pen, you know, kind of tick, pass, fail. But if we review it, that gives the idea that we're doing it with people. So I'll usually engage with people from the campus, you know, to start with. But if it's me just on my first visit, I'll just notice light, smell, the welcome I get from the team in reception. If there is anyone in reception, you know, with staffing issues, etc., is there a sign saying call this number and someone will be right with you? I don't know the impact on US institutions, but in the UK, there is certainly a contraction of financial sustainability. The funding model in the UK is acknowledged to be pretty broken. So a lot of institutions are having to cut resources. So you may not meet a person when you first encounter, you come into the welcome area. We look around what the physical environment is, what the signage is. And then I go into detail more around interactions. So when you have meetings with people, do people know what's going to happen? where they take place, who's going to be there. It sounds quite a lot of very kind of, well, it's obvious, right, kind of work. But actually, it's amazing to me that I'll still work with organizations. I'll say, okay, so you have meetings. What do they look like? When do you get the agenda? Who knows who's talking about what? So many places don't have an agenda. They don't kind of follow a format. And that's very confusing, very unproductive, and doesn't tend to work. So, you know, it's just little things. But what you just said is very insightful. All these things are cumulative. So if you want to have a good campus experience, what we're trying to do is just shave away the barriers and the bumps in the road so that I can just come onto campus. I can decompress if I find that journey challenging or difficult. But I need to come onto campus. What's the value of me coming on? Bit of decompression space, probably some good food or some nice refreshment. I know where they are on campus, and then I can get into my learning, teaching, research, whatever I'm doing there that day. Nice. That's it. I think that's a key principle.
I love that because it just essentially removes barriers from being able to be present, being able to be mindful, being able to make the social connections, which if you live on a university campus is very, very important. But if you're constantly worried about where you're supposed to go, what you're doing, are you doing things the right way? You don't have the emotional and the mental, you know, capability to worry about all of those things and then still be able to put your all into studying and making those social connections.
Yeah. So you like can't you do said, your best work. Yeah.
No, you can't be your best self either is the hardest part. And when you can't show up as your best self, then you're not going to be able to make those meaningful connections that are going to help you in your career and down the line.
Yeah.
I love that. Now, Pete, I have a hard question for you. I've asked you this question before, but we're going to do it again.
Okay.
So if you were going to give three pieces of advice to university students, this could be about them personally becoming more inclusive or just making their spaces more inclusive. What would those three pieces of advice be?
Don't worry so much.
I like it.
just go with it. See how you get on. In terms of, you know, any of these approaches, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Is often, you know, do ask questions. I find that you talked about cancel culture at the beginning, but a smaller form of that is people are worried about being judged. So I work in some countries in Asia, and there's a huge thing about losing faith and not wanting to ask questions. That's fine. We can get around that with digital technology. But even in a Western or a North American environment, there's still that worry about, am I going to look stupid? Am I going to look, are people going to judge me? But ask, because probably lots of other people have got the same question, but they're just a bit fearful to do so. And I think just be curious about other people. You know, go and try and learn something about that culture. And often that's through food, you know, so go and spend time with people and eat their food, be amongst their population, be amongst their community. And that leads to so much kind of knowledge and awareness. And that's very possible. And I'm not talking about the kind of anthropological coming off the veranda and going and doing great work kind of nonsense. I'm just saying, just lower your guard a little, you know, show a bit of humanity. And as a species, we need that connection. You know, maybe all this digital connection is something that's really impacting on us currently. 70% or more of communication is nonverbal, you know. So let's get there in person and do a lot more of that, and get to know other people. And that's going to be a skill that I don't think AI will be able to master anytime soon. Is that human connection, that those slight nuances that human beings recognize, but that non-humans don't.
I love everything you said, particularly number two, because I'm a professional question asker. Mm. And sometimes even the questions that I'll ask here might seem duh, or they might seem a little on the silly side. But when you ask questions that come from a space of really wanting to know, you're able to bond with people so much quicker.
Yeah, I think so. And in a campus environment, there is that kind of intellectual warfare almost, you know? But I think we just need to have a truce occasionally and just give people space and time. If you look at the kind of great historical clashes in academia, they came from a place of respect. You know, they were just, you know, and I mean respect in terms of intellectual respect. I don't mean in personal respect, because there was often animosity between the often men who were debating or disagreeing. And woe betide if you were a woman to go up against the hierarchy or go up against the orthodoxy. But yeah, I think I keep coming back to kindness. But I do think it's really important as a tool and as a deliberate action and a deliberate way of working and approaching things is with kindness. And to yourself, you know, forgive yourself. Don't be so harsh on yourself as a critic, but be kind to others as well. And it makes a lot of difference. You make a lot of progress that way.
Mm-hmm. I like that. And we talk about it when we're 5 years old, but then, you know, we discuss it, but then we're supposed to just know kindness. We're supposed to know how to operate from a space of kindness, even when somebody disagrees with us, or we come into contact with someone who may trigger us a little or may make us a little uncomfortable because we have some sort of preconceived concepts. But I love that you're bringing up kindness again, because it's something you do have to practice. And as you grow in your life, obviously your version of kindness at 5 is very different than your version of kindness at 25 or at 18. So I love that you bring that up.
But if you're leaving the campus and going into work environment, you know, the absence of kindness is unfortunate, quite commonplace, but I think that's going to be a distinctive difference in the future. You know, if you're going to have human to human related jobs and roles, then, you know, that kindness element is really important to foster, to develop, to create and to grow.
I love it. Well, Pete, you've helped me create another more inclusive world. Part 2. I'm so happy I had you back, because we touched on some very different things this time. Thank you. Thank you for sharing your insights. I like it.
Thank you. Yeah, well, you're very welcome, and nice to see you in person. I think it was audio last time only, so
it was audio. Brooke did her makeup, put on her earrings, and all.
Yeah, good to see you. Now, I'm not sure it's the same for me, but there we go.
Oh, it is. You look nice. If somebody wants to find you, if they want to learn more, connect with you on social, where do they go?
I think LinkedIn is probably the easiest. You know, I'm of that age, so find me on LinkedIn. You know, look me up. I regularly post what I do. I use, I'm from the same part of the world as David Hockney, the most famous British living artist. So I usually post a Hockney picture. So if you don't like what I'm doing, at least you can like what he's doing. And I share about the kind of things I'm doing in this country and in different countries, whether it's in the Middle East, Asia, or across Europe and the UK.
Well, Pete, I like what you're doing. Thank you so much for sharing your time and your expertise and helping us know how to navigate what can be a very complex and difficult topic. We appreciate it. And thank you to everyone for joining us on another episode of the Campus Chronicles podcast.
So if today's episode gave you life, perspective, or just a much needed moment to breathe in a busy world, I don't want you to keep it to yourself. Share it, tag us, please send it to a friend who needs to hear it. And if you're not on our newsletter yet, what are you doing? Go to campuschroniclespod.com and join the crew. We have all the behind the scenes things, unfiltered thoughts from me and the team, bonus resources, and insider only invites to events, giveaways, and things that we really don't post anywhere else. I promise I'm not going to spam you. It's just the good stuff straight to your inbox. Being in university is wild enough. You don't need to miss out on what matters. Sign up now and let's make this next semester the one that you stop surviving and start thriving. Until next time, stay bold, stay curious, keep writing your own chapter. This is Campus Chronicles.